Hello, once again. Welcome back to the Vox Pop WMC's live call-in show. I'm Alan Shartok. Do you suspect you may be experiencing depression? Do you or a loved one have an issue with drugs or alcohol abuse? Joining us on this Medical Monday to address these issues is the very popular Dr. Jennifer Michaels, medical director of the Breen Center, Berkshire County's largest community mental health agency, in practice for over 15 years. Dr. Michaels is board certified in adult psychiatry and addiction psychiatry. In addition to her work at the Breen Center, she's attending psychiatrist at Berkshire Medical Center, a devoted community educator. She lectures on a wide range of mental health topics. Dr. Michaels is also assistant professor of psychiatry at the University of Massachusetts. And let me tell you, that's important work because there are very few like her who can tell medical students what's up. Dr. Michaels, welcome back to the Medical Monday.
Oh, thank you for inviting me back.
Well, always. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can tweet us at WAMC Vox Pop. That's one word, WAMC Vox Pop. That's one word. The problem is that on the script I'm reading, it's three words. 1-800-323-9262. All right. Here we go. Dr. Michaels, of course, you are the medical director of the very famous and appropriately so Breen Center in Pittsfield. And right now, Pittsfield is in a bit of tizzy over a methadone addiction treatment center. Most people know you need it, but most people don't want it next door to them. Surprise. So what's going on?
Well, I think you're exactly right that people are accepting that we need methadone treatment in Berkshire County, but there's an attitude of we don't want it near our home, not in my backyard.
Yeah. So, well, how many of us would? I mean, you know, you want to be accepting. I was trained by the NIMH, and I went through the early part of this. There were lots of problems. People were lining up. They were selling doses to each other. They were feigning taking them and all the rest. And people who have addiction often have, frankly, stolen to get their addiction satisfied. And you got a little kid playing in front of your house, you might not want it. Now, I am trying to take the devil's advocate position here, but it is it's a very difficult situation to cite something like this.
It is complicated. And in Berkshire County, I think many people live in Berkshire County to have privacy and to have a bucolic setting. So I don't think it's that unusual to want this business to be in a non-residential area.
Right.
But I think there's a huge stereotype when it comes to addiction, patients with addiction. And you know, people who have addiction are like you or me.
Sure.
They can be anyone. There's no visual signs often. And so the stereotype is false, and I think it's damaging to this process.
Well, that's right. But as the old saying goes, all it takes is one, and that is the problem. Let's go to Tim in Gilderland, 1-800-348-2551. Tim, you're on.
Thank you, Alan. I was going to talk about something different,
sure.
But actually I want to stay on topic here because I lived in a neighborhood in Manhattan that before I moved in there, I didn't realize it had the highest concentration of methadone clinics in New York City.
East Side.
Yep.
Right. Go ahead.
The East 30s.
Uh-huh.
I used to live there, too.
I worked at
Bellevue, so I know.
You worked at Bellevue. I live three blocks from Bellevue.
Okay.
Okay, and it's not a nice thing. It's they hang out, and you want to wish the best for everybody and get straight, but they would hang out and they would attract other people that would hang out in the neighborhood. You worked at Bellevue?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, and so finally, and after I moved in there, suddenly somebody told me this is the highest concentration of methadone clinics in New York City. And I said, this is not a really pleasant place to live. And you want to wish everybody recovery and get straight and do everything, but it was not very pleasant. So I understand the issue, I think, that Alan was talking about in Massachusetts. There's not a lot that can be, well, it has to be controlled.
Okay, well, go ahead. I'm sorry, Doc.
No, I was just going to say, I think you're right. I think the quality of the program providing the methadone is very important because a high-quality program will limit the ability of someone to loiter, will have more structure, and it really stops that kind of behavior that you're talking about.
Well, how about putting it in a hospital, for example?
I think that's a great idea. I actually worked in a methadone clinic many moons ago, and the Bellevue Hospital Methadone Clinic was located in Bellevue.
Sure. So if we decided to, as a community, to do this at the Berkshire Medical Center, do you think David Phelps would take exception to this idea or not?
I think he's a very progressive person who would support treating people in his community. He's always supported that. I think that some of the difficulty is setting up a clinic is complicated. There are federal laws and state laws, and probably someone who does it frequently, like this group coming in, would be better equipped to do it.
Now, you told me something that I was fascinated by before. You said we don't give out methadone only in terms of, addiction, drug addiction. We also have other reasons for doing it, which are pain.
Yes, and most people think of methadone, they think of treatment for addiction. Actually, I think more of the methadone in the community is given for pain management. And what's worrisome about that is it's very easy to overdose on methadone.
And, Doctor?
Yes.
Do people get addicted to methadone?
People get physiologically dependent, meaning that if you take a dose regularly, your body will expect another dose. And if you don't get that next dose, you'll go through withdrawal.
And so what's the difference between that and addiction?
So addiction is the behaviors, the typical behaviors we think of. Someone taking a medication they don't need, taking it to get high. Trying to stop, but they can't stay stopped, versus physiological dependence is I'm taking a medicine I need to continue to take for my pain. And also, if I stop taking it, I'll have withdrawal symptoms, but I'm not behaving like I'm addicted.
Yeah. Tim, I wanted to ask you a question. I know that you went with the flow and came on addiction. You had another question.
Oh, no, it's off topic. It was about concussions.
No, that's fine, because it is not only about methadone today. We're doing everything. Go ahead.
Okay, but it was off topic about concussions, and the doctor may, her specialty, and she's great at this. But there is a series of stories about football players who are having concussions, and they're very serious. I had one in high school when I was playing football in high school, and they are painful, and they don't go away in 2 or 3 days. After 2 or 3, about 2 weeks, they go away. But that was my initial question, but I just wanted to just stay on topic with you. But that was the initial question about concussions. If the doctor has an opinion on it, that'd be great.
Well, I'm not a neurologist, and probably a neurologist can weigh in better. But I would say I'm seeing that there's more awareness and there's more studying going on looking at concussions, particularly in football players. You probably know that some football players have committed suicide because
they
have...
Oh, yeah, there are two. There are actually two in the last, 6 months or something.
Yes, and this is a bit gory, but they shot themselves not in the head because they wanted to leave their brains to science so that the effects... it's very serious. The effects of multiple concussions is so damaging. They want scientists to be able to understand the damage.
Do you think football should be banned, Doctor?
Oh, no. I am not qualified to comment on that.
Well, Tim, all I can say is... The difference between you and me, Tim, is that I was born a shrimp, stayed a shrimp for the rest of my life, was never going to play football, and that is one of the great beneficiaries of not being a big guy. You know what I mean?
Well, I understand that, but I can tell you, I had one in high school, and that was enough.
Okay, gotcha.
And
you learned.
It stays with you for 2 weeks. If anybody who's had one, they understand it. It's not like... You got a headache, and then it's over the next day.
Tim, thanks for the great call. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
1-800-348-2551. Maureen in Orange County. Maureen, you're on.
Hello, how are you?
We're good.
Oh, good. I'm calling as a member of a family who has a 56-year-old brother who is a coke addict, and I guess things really started to fall apart probably in May, so much so that he's lost his apartment. He's not been able to pay any of his bills. He's out of money completely. He's a diabetic, but he gave up his medical. And very recently, he's tried rehab 3 times. And the third time, he wound up having chest pains, and he also wound up going to the hospital and having quadruple bypass. He's really in a dire straits, and it's almost as if he's in denial because things are, he just doesn't have anything anymore. He's staying with my mother. She's 90, and I think she's an enabler, and I have three other brothers and sisters, and we don't know how to help him through the situation without enabling him more.
Okay, Maureen, I am sorry. We're up against an unmovable post, but I do want to give the doctor a chance to answer.
Thank you.
Okay. It sounds like his situation is quite dire, given that he has cardiac or heart disease and he's a cocaine addict. I think he needs a longer-term residential program, and there are halfway houses that can be investigated. A social worker, a therapist can help you look into this. You can also go onto a website called SAMHSA, S-A-M-H-S-A. That's our...
S-A-M-H...
It's a little confusing. S-A-M-H-S-A. A, it's SAMHSA, but the HS is reversed, and you can locate treatment programs in your area. And he needs a longer term halfway house. It's probably not ideal to live with mom, who's 90 years of age. Probably better to live with other people in recovery for 6 months, a year, maybe even 2 years.
How do you get him to go?
Well, how do we do that?
A very skilled interventionist.
Uh-huh.
And I would also recommend that you go to Al-Anon or Naranon and get some support from other people in recovery who can help you navigate this difficult situation.
Maureen, I wish we could spend more time with you. We cannot.
No, okay.
We thank you so much for the call.
Appreciate
it. Yeah, bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
1-800-348-2551.
Support for WAMC comes from Athos Restaurant, Albany, serving classic Greek cuisine, weekly specials featured on a 3-course prefix menu, dinner served daily, live music every Friday night, athosrestaurant.com.
And we are back with the fabulous Dr. Jennifer Michaels, the head of the Breen Center, the medical head of the Breen Center in Pittsfield, Massachusetts. Incredibly well-versed in all of psychiatry, but in particular on the addictions. But there are a lot of reasons you might want to call, and she's here for you. We have somebody on the line, but we have lots of free lines. Untypically, they will be filled up in a minute. So if I were you, I'd run. 1-800-348-2551. Again, 1-800-348-2551. Mark in Hillsdale. Okay, Mark, you're on.
Good afternoon, Alan and Doctor. There's a fairly significant history in my family of alcoholism on both sides, but I was wondering if there was any connection between diet and the need to drink more or less, or if there was a way one could supplement, change one's diet that would change the drive or the need to drink.
That's
anything connected with like the sugars and bread or pasta or potatoes or things like that?
Fascinating question.
Yeah, it's a great question. First of all, for people who suffer with alcoholism, there's a tendency to also get addicted to food and to caffeinated beverages. So you want to be careful not to overuse certain foods. Like just today I was talking to a patient who drank 7 or 8 coffees a day. Wasn't drinking alcohol, but was using addictive behavior with caffeinated beverages.
Interesting.
Be careful, because that can trigger a relapse with alcohol.
Right.
And you want, I say this to everyone, but you want to have a rainbow on your plate. You want to eat healthy foods that give a variety of vitamins and minerals. You don't want to just have starchy white foods, because that can make you sluggish. And then you look for a pick-me-up, which is a caffeinated beverage, or maybe your substance of choice. So I would recommend fruits, vegetables, diversity in your diet, and not a lot of sodas and things like that.
Yeah, I don't drink a lot of soda, but is there any connection between lack of maybe B vitamins and or you know that trigger you know frequent drinking. Well, if one were able to take you know more B vitamins or eat foods with more B vitamin content, if that would cut down on one's need to intake.
Well, we know that people who drink a lot of alcohol are deficient more frequently in B vitamins and other nutrients. So a multivitamin would be helpful. I don't know that being deficient increases the likelihood that you'll relapse with alcohol, but just being alcoholic makes you vulnerable to deficiencies, and you may feel tired or depressed, and those symptoms make you more vulnerable to drinking again.
Hey, Mark, okay. Mark, a lot of people behind you. We thank you for the wonderful call.
Very
interesting question. Yep. Bye. All right. Let's go to Rena in Roxbury. Rena in Roxbury. RR. Go ahead.
Hello. I'm going back to the person who called about the family member who was losing everything because of the addiction. You talked about the need for a skilled person to engage the person in therapy and support for the family. Any suggestions on how to do this? Also, the question of insurance coverage. If someone doesn't have the financial, he may have lost his insurance. Insurance limits, which is probably why he had short-term rehabs. Many of them are, I believe, are 28 days. And not having ongoing continuum of care after that. Can you address the issue of how people can access programs? Many people don't have insurance, or insurance is very limited, doesn't cover.
Hey, Rena,
yeah.
I'm sure you're right on target, and we got the question. Let's get the answer. Go ahead.
Yes, Rena, great question. And what I see from my viewpoint is there are really two tiers. There are those who have lots of money, great insurance, and they can go wherever, whenever they want. Most of us are not like that, and we can still get treatment, though. And there are programs, usually they're called therapeutic communities, halfway houses, also community mental health. And most of these programs will take Medicaid or reimbursement from the Bureau of Substance Abuse Services. So most of the people I treat do not are not in the first tier. We are reimbursed by Medicaid or another state agency. So there is treatment available. It may not be as plush. Oftentimes it's more bare bones, but it gets the job done, and it does a great job for people.
Rena?
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. 1-800-348-2551. You want to get in? Now's the time to do it. Don't wait to the end, because then you won't. I invite you to ask any question about mental health, psychiatry, addiction. We have a great expert here who, as you can hear, gives great answers. Let's go to Joseph in South Albany. Joseph.
Hey, how are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I put on testosterone replacement for a hormone replacement, and I found myself getting really anxious through it a lot. When I tried to go off it, I just continually go through really deep bouts of depression. What can I do that's going to give me a better level of hormonal replacement and not have to go through that kind of depression?
So let me add on to that question, very good question, the idea that we're hearing from Joseph. And when we hear about hormone replacement, we often hear from women as opposed to men. Mm-hmm. Maybe you could explain some of this to us, Doc.
Well, we sometimes have deficiencies or low levels of testosterone.
Sure.
Estrogen and are symptomatic. And some doctors will prescribe a patch or a gel, and they can work beautifully. I personally do not provide that type of treatment. And as far as Joseph is concerned, I'm wondering if he's stopping cold turkey and then having what we call rebound symptoms, and maybe he has to slowly lower his dose over time. But he should work closely with his doctor and make sure that he's not stopping on his own. But very commonly, we're seeing testosterone gels being prescribed for men who have low levels. It's helping with things like concentration or energy level. So, Joseph, are you seeing a doctor and working through the tapering?
Yeah, it seems like they're having difficulty getting it either too high or too low.
Hmm. Okay. And it's a gel or a patch?
It's a gel.
Okay. I would ask you to either get a consultation with someone else to see if there are alternative formulations, or go back to your doctor and also chart the dose and your symptoms over the course of a month to see if there's any correlation with when you change and when you start to feel depressed.
Okay.
Okay.
Joseph, thanks. Yeah, well, go ahead. Go ahead,
thanks
Joseph.
Thanks very much.
Okay, thanks,
Thank
Joseph.
You.
Yeah. Okay, 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Karen in Fishkill. Okay, is it Karen?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have always wondered why hypnosis works for smoking cessation and other kinds of problems, but doesn't work for alcohol.
Great question. And you know what? I haven't heard that that hypnosis works for alcohol either. So I think we have more experience. It may be that alcohol use has more of a physiologic component to it than smoking. What I mean by that, if you stop drinking, if you're actively drinking and then stop cold turkey, you'll go through a withdrawal that could be life-threatening. So it may be that it's a more tenacious disease that wouldn't respond to hypnosis. But I'm not sure. I know that it's not used with any regularity.
Now, may I add, for this political scientist perspective, I have seen plenty of people who've tried hypnosis with smoking, and it doesn't work for them either. Now, I don't want to tell you it won't work for you, but
right.
I know a lot of people have tried it. It's a tough thing to stop smoking. It's a real addiction, isn't it, Jennifer?
It's a tough thing. I'm seeing a lot of success, though, with all the new medications. There's Chantix, which works beautifully. There's Wellbutrin. There's replacement therapy. And what's neat is oftentimes we can layer the treatment. Like you can take Wellbutrin and nicotine gum, or you can use a patch and gum. And why not try hypnosis? And there's something called cognitive behavioral therapy.
What's that?
That's where you you become much more aware of your automatic habitual behaviors. So we say to the patient, you can smoke as much as you want, but before you do, you have to record it in this book.
Uh-huh.
And it's a little tedious.
We do this with dieting too sometimes.
Yes.
You have to write it down.
Yes.
And if you know you have to write it down, maybe you don't do it.
Exactly. You have to think about it instead of being thoughtless. You know, you have to think about it. And we break habits. Like if you smoke regular, we have you switch to menthol.
Now, don't you think, Dr. Michaels, that we have also created a prohibitive social milieu for, you know, you are basically shunned if you're a smoker these days, where even 5 years ago, that wasn't really that true.
And I think it's helping people to stop. I have patients who bemoan the fact that, you know, it's winter, they're outside of their garage smoking, the family's inside, and, you know, they're saying to themselves, there's something wrong with this picture. I think I'm ready to stop.
Yeah.
I'm all for that.
I have a good friend whose girlfriend won't let him keep the door open when he smokes outside.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that reinforces every time, you know, what's going on. So there is that. And, of course, we all feel for everybody who needs to get off but is having a hard time doing it.
Yes, and just know that it takes multiple attempts before someone is successful. So if you don't make it the first time, try again, and sooner or later you will get it.
Hey, Karen, you want to go real quickly back to your original question about the drinking now that we've gotten that out of the way?
Yeah, can you do cognitive for drinking then?
Yes.
Plan.
Is this for yourself, if you don't mind me asking, or for someone
else? It's all anonymous, so you don't have to worry. We're not using your last name. Yeah.
It's for drinking wine every day. Just a couple of glasses, but... You know, in the morning, I'd like to quit, but by 5 o'clock, change my mind.
Okay. Sure.
So that and what you're describing is a very common problem that we are attuned to a certain time of day or a certain emotion, and we connect that with a behavior. So that's what you've done. Cognitive behavioral therapy helps to disconnect that behavior. Some people will call this relapse prevention therapy, but it's cognitive behavioral therapy, and it's widely used. A good social worker or mental health clinician can help you with this.
Hey, Karen, thanks for the great call. Appreciate it a lot.
Bye. Yeah.
Good luck. Best of luck, Karen.
1-800-348-2551. Three phones are in use right now, and two are not. You want to get online? Just do it right this second. Always want to keep you informed as to what's going on. We'll go to David in Albany. All right, David, you're up.
No, my question has to do with access to care. I have a very elderly neighbor who I tried to help find a psychiatrist as a new patient. Her former one, she lost for whatever reason, and she needed to have her med adjusted, and she was having trouble finding a participating provider. So I, on her behalf, I went down the list of every provider in Albany County and was told almost at every turn, either they were not accepting patients, new patients, or they simply weren't answering the phone. They would get back, say they would get back to you, and they would not. So it became clear to me that the access for new people coming into the system in the absence of a huge crisis was not there, and that this person really was stuck, and I ended up having to find somebody for her in Schenectady County who was a nurse practitioner in a practice out there somewhere. And so I was wondering what's going on. Why is it so difficult for anybody who's new to get into the system?
It, you know, David, it first of all, you're a wonderful neighbor to help that elderly woman. You're a good person, very good person. It is difficult to access psychiatric care. We have a shortage of child and adolescent psychiatrists, adult psychiatrists. We have primary care now providing some of the psychiatric care to their patients. So if your neighbor has kind of a simple mental health issue, her primary care can help out. But I think this is a local problem and a national problem.
And there's no initiatives at the medical schools to pump up the number of psychiatrists they send out, put out into the world, or is that just a function of the marketplace? Why is it so that way?
I think we're an aging population. I think also it's a very good thing. We're increasing access to care. And with those initiatives, we need more physicians, and we didn't really plan for it. So we have a significant shortage of providers.
And David, I think, has a good point, which is that if you take a look at how much each of the subspecialties makes, psychiatry is by no means at the top of the list.
I think we're either at the bottom or maybe one rung up.
I think
up.
Pediatricians may be lower. But
yeah.
Other than that, so David, you make a very good point. And it's not something Dr. Michaels, I suspect, can answer here. But she acknowledges what you're saying is the case.
Yeah.
And we thank you for the call.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Thank you, David.
Okay. Let's go to Ann in Albany. Ann in Albany, you're on.
Hi. Good afternoon. I have a 31-year-old son who over the last couple years has started to develop anxiety issues. Not quite sure what they're triggered by different circumstances that may happen in his life. I did, about a year ago, he was living in New York City, he called me, and I got a hold of a psychiatrist, got him in. He talked to him for probably about a half hour, put him on a couple different meds, and basically sent him out the door on his way. My son took the medicines for a while. I was hoping that there was going to be some discussion about going to therapy to speak with someone to try to help him with why he's having these problems now in his life. That never really happened. He went every 3 months to be checked by the doctor and to make sure he was still functioning. But is that normal procedure when someone's experienced something like this?
Anne, my hope would be that your son would receive medication if he needs it, but also have a therapist. Because
right.
Studies show that combining those two treatments are most beneficial. And cognitive behavioral therapy, talk therapy of some sort, that really will help his anxiety. It will help it to dissipate. And also, it will help him to learn tools. If he starts to get anxious, it's almost like he can pull out a tool that he's learned in therapy, and it will help to lower the anxiety.
And that's exactly what I was hoping for, but that wasn't prompted by the psychiatrist at all. Do they not go hand in hand generally?
It depends. It depends on the psychiatrist. I think if your son asking for therapy?
I think he was asking for medication.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, he's 31. I didn't go into the appointment with him. Mm-hmm. I guess I was under the impression that if they put you on any kind of medication like that, that would be one of the things that had to happen along with that. it hasn't, and I am trying to talk him into going to therapy. His episodes don't happen. He has stopped taking the medicine, and I guess he thought that he could handle things, and he just recently had an issue with breaking up with a girlfriend, and now it's right in the midst of, you know, being depressed, not wanting to get up, telling me that, you know, he feels like his heart is racing and whatnot, and I'm trying to get him in, but I don't want him to go back to the same psychiatrist.
Okay, so let's go, you know, it's my impression, but correct me if I'm wrong, Dr. Michaels, that often the reason for putting people on medication is so that they can get over some of the terrible aspects of, you know, their condition, and then they can talk to somebody, which they might not be able to do otherwise. Am I wrong about that?
I think that medication helps, and it doesn't solve the problem.
Right.
And so I agree with you that the medication is not bad. It's good,
yeah.
But it works even better if someone's talking about what's going on.
And people are always looking for a magic pill as opposed to the
right.
Hard work. Yeah.
Right, I agree. Mm-hmm. I just one more question. When he was younger, he was taking part in smoking pot, no heroin or anything that.
Okay, we're going to have to, and we're going to have to stop right there and ask Dr. Michaels to answer about pot. You've been pretty specific about your feelings about pot.
Well, I have a skewed view because I see the people who've been smoking pot and then have psychiatric symptoms.
Right.
And we know that there's an association between marijuana smoking and anxiety, depression, suicidal thoughts, schizophrenia. And so if someone is actively smoking and experiencing symptoms, it would be really good for that person to stop smoking marijuana.
Well, he has. He definitely has. But I'm just wondering if there's lingering effects.
Is it
effect?
With you forever? Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Well,
is it?
You know, that's a tough question because there's, you know, when did he start smoking? What was the volume? Did he use
how
other
long?
Substances? What is his genetic predisposition? It's not something that I could really answer accurately.
And thank you very much. I'm sorry
we
have to go away and take a little rest here. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Okay, so if your name is Christian or Diana or Chris or Jim, you stay right where you are. We'll be right back to you.
Support for WAMC comes from St. Francis Hospital and Health Centers Poughkeepsie, serving the healthcare needs of the community, including trauma and emergency care, and the Center for Robotic Surgery, sfhospital.org. SPAC presenting the 22nd annual Saratoga Chamber Music Festival, sponsored by WAMC and WMHT, featuring the Wister Quartet performing Bucarini, WC, and Donini on Tuesday, August 7th in the Spa Little Theater, spac.org. Whitney's Farm Market and Country Gardens, Cheshire, Massachusetts. Third annual Corn Fest, August 4th from 11 till 4. Corn eating, sack races, and more. You pick blueberries and Whitney's own fresh-picked butter and sugar corn. Whitney'sFarm.com. And Chez Albert, Amherst, Massachusetts, featuring dishes inspired by French country cooking and introducing a new and expanded location at 178 North Pleasant Street. ChezAlbert.net for menu.
And we are back with the wonderful Dr. Jennifer Michaels. The phones are loaded. There is actually one free phone right now. Little lonely line number 3. But let's go to Christian in Brooklyn. Is it Brooklyn? Whoa. Okay. Is it Christian?
Yes. Thank you. I like your station very much, although
right.
I do live at NYC. My son is 28. He is with a psychiatrist, a diagnosed bipolar. He's working with a psychotherapist. But he's improving. But there is one part, which is he compulsively spends, or as soon as he gets money, it's gone. I'm wondering whether that's an addiction per se, and whether something like dialectical behavior therapy would help, which is the fancy seat cognitive.
Mm-hmm. Okay, very good question. And you said that your son was diagnosed with bipolar disorder.
Yeah.
One of the symptoms of bipolar disorder is excessive spending of money. So it's really hard to tease out when someone is actively bipolar or has residual symptoms if the excessive spending is from the bipolar or a compulsive behavior.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know if I would sign him up for comprehensive treatment until we knew for sure that the bipolar was in good control.
Will you remind me, Jennifer, what a bipolar is?
Bipolar is also called manic depression.
Okay.
And it's extremes in mood swings. People can become psychotic, but we're seeing a lot of milder cases where there's lability or irritability, decreased sleep, alternating with depression, lack of energy, poor motivation.
Described me perfectly. Thank you.
But very functional.
Kristen, thank you very much. Anything else on that?
I think that's good because he's pursuing it with his therapist. So
okay. Well, great. And thanks for calling from Brooklyn. We always love to hear. Are you listening on the computer?
Yes.
Okay. Thanks again.
I wish him well.
Yeah, bye.
Thank you so much.
Yep. Let's go to Diana in Rhinebeck. Diana, you're on.
Yes, hi, Doctor and Alan.
Okay.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a 20-year-old son. At the age of 17, he became ill, was in and out of hospitals 4 or 5 times. He is now living in a residential facility in New England. We don't have a definite diagnosis, but I guess it's schizophrenia. He's currently on a regimen of, Zyprexa, Haldol, Depakote, and Cogentin. He feels a very terrible dulling effect from this, and his psychiatrist is considering a change to Clozaril. I'm fearful of that change, and I'm wondering if you could, Doctor, speak to Clozaril and the risks and benefits of this type of change.
Okay. Clozaril is an antipsychotic medication, and it's often used when people have had difficulty responding to other antipsychotics. It's a very well-known medication, a lot of good efficacy studies. It does have side effects, though, and some of them are weight gain, or maybe drooling, sedation. And I think the medication your son is taking currently can have side effects, too. So you have to weigh the benefits and the risks of those medications against taking Clozaril, and that probably can best be done with his physician.
And in terms of, would you be able to compare the side effects of Clozaril, not so much the cardiovascular or the, you know, the risk of white blood cell problems,
mm-hmm.
but in terms of the side effects, sedation, the dulling effect, extrapyramidal symptoms, mm-hmm. could you speak to that at all?
Well, you know, it would be unfair of me to do that because some patients do beautifully on Clozaril and have no severe side effects, and then other people can't tolerate it,
mm-hmm.
just like some people tolerate Zyprexawil and others have to get off of the medication. So it's on an individual basis, and I think going in, knowing those potential side effects, and hoping for the best is probably the appropriate way to proceed.
Diana?
One more quick question.
All right.
I've read in various places that Clozaril is sort of a medication of last resort for patients who are not responding or who are suicidal. Does that conform to what you know?
Well, you know, Clozaril became available at a time when we had limited ability to help schizophrenic patients to feel better, to feel quote-unquote normal. And Clozaril seemed to help people who previously were not helped by antipsychotics. So there was a lot of hope, and there still is a lot of hope when people get on this medication that they'll have a better response than they did on other medications.
I see. All right, thank you very much.
Thanks,
okay,
Diana.
Thank you.
Yeah. Let's go to Chris in Hudson. Chris in Hudson, you're on. Well, you are. Chris, are you there?
Hi.
Okay, go ahead.
Yes. Hi. My question is about medication and... question is that does it really present a false hope, being my experience of depression and in my studies, it seems like people have been on depression for years, and I've tried every medication they have out there, and there's very little effect, very small effects, and I find that the general population that suffers from depression, statistics also show that there's been lots of medication used, and so.
Okay, so you're asking, Chris, you're asking if it's hopeless, doctor?
Does it present a false hope?
You know, antidepressants work for some people, but but they don't work for everyone. And there are different antidepressants for just that reason. So a physician may switch your medication or may augment your medication with an additional one to boost the effects of an antidepressant. And that's kind of the real world treatment of depression. In addition, we have to look at your lifestyle. Are you eating a healthy diet? Are you exercising? Are you getting enough sleep? People don't realize that we undersleep, and undersleeping will lead to an increased risk for depression, fatigue, anxiety. So it's a whole lifestyle package. The pill will do just so much. And then also, if you have things to talk about, are you talking to a therapist, working through your issues or patterns of behavior that increase the likelihood that depression will not get better?
Does that medication that you recommend for sleep too, if you have insomnia? Or...
I'm sorry, Chris?
Could you say it again?
Is there a medication that you would recommend for sleep? Or you don't do that over the air?
There are a variety of medications. One big thing I want to say is if you are watching TV or playing on your computer late at night and you're vulnerable to blue light, the blue light on your computer, it will turn off melatonin in your brain and you will have difficulty initiating sleep.
What about taking melatonin sold over the counter?
Melatonin, 3 milligrams at nighttime before bedtime, is a very good option.
Any byproducts of that?
What I see is that it works for some and not for others, and some people feel tired in the morning. But that is a very good choice, Chris. That may be the easiest thing to try. But I would have you talk to your doctor first before initiating that.
Absolutely. Chris, thanks for calling. Appreciate it very much. We'll go to Jim in Schenectady. All right, Jim, you're on. 1-800-348-2551. Go, Jim.
Hi, Alan and Dr. Michaels. I was looking for a comment, doctor. I work with a population of people who have been injured. Some of them develop chronic injuries, chronic pain. They're people who are not addicted at the outset. They're not dependent on drugs. They're working normal lives. They then get OxyContin or hydrocodone or something like that for their pain. And the next thing you know, they have a drug dependency, which sometimes dwarfs the problem that they had with the chronic pain. And this can start a scenario that's 2, 3, 4 years of unproductive lives before they can get themselves straightened out, and sometimes through a detox and whatnot. And then they're still left with the chronic pain that hasn't gone away, and they're having to deal with the drug dependency. I'm just wondering if you can comment about that. I'm given to understand that this is a growing epidemic in the country.
It is a growing epidemic, and what we're seeing is that people have an expectation that they should not have any pain, and so they're asking for pain meds. Doctors are providing many more pain medications. I think in 2010, enough pain medications were prescribed in this country for every man, woman, and child to have pain meds 24 hours a day for a whole month.
Whoa.
Wow.
Yeah. So we have a real problem in this country. And the problem with opioids, opioid pain meds like OxyContin and Vicodin and things like that, is they don't really treat pain. They just make you feel like you're not in pain. So you may jump down the steps or move your body in a way that further injures the vulnerable area. And so I think that people need non-opioid alternatives for pain management.
So? Like what?
Oh, so, you know what? Motrin or ibuprofen really works.
Yeah.
Physical therapy, Tylenol, those methods. And there are other medications that a pain specialist knows better, like Neurontin or Gabapentin, that will not cause that cycle of addiction. Those should be tried before opioids.
Because, now, how about people who get addicted to Motrin? I mean, I've seen it. I've seen people who just eat the stuff like candy.
So if someone's eating it like candy, I'm laughing because my kids would say I'm one of those. But I wake up in the morning and I'm kind of achy, so I take Motrin. You have to look at why the person's taking Motrin and try to solve that problem. Is it arthritis? Is it the way they're sleeping? Is it the way they're moving? Solve the problem. Just don't medicate it. It won't be medicated away.
Yeah, gotcha. Okay, listen, that was a great question, Jim. Thanks for calling.
Appreciate Thank you.
It. Yep. Let's go to James in Monroe, or is it James Monroe? Go ahead, James.
Yes, hi. I had, through my life, I had been addicted to drugs and alcohol, and I've stopped. I don't do anything like that. And I quit smoking a year ago. I gained 100 pounds. Mm. And I listen to everybody and try to do all the stuff they do, and it's just like, I don't smoke, I don't drink, and you know, there's so much missing in my life from doing that. It's just like I have a voracious appetite, like an animal.
Okay, stop right there, because we're running out of time, and I want to get an answer from Dr. Michaels.
So, James, your comments make me think of a few things. One thing is addiction transfer. You know, you very successfully stopped drinking and smoking. That's wonderful, but you may have transferred your addiction to food, and now you have another problem, and you can work on that, and it can get better. A little bit of an addiction to exercise would be a great thing for you.
Yeah, I have that.
A healthy addiction to exercise. The other thing I'm thinking about is you should get your thyroid checked, because thyroid issues, Alan and I have talked about this, are ubiquitous, really common and very treatable. And if you have a thyroid problem, you won't be able to lose weight unless it's treated. Okay, James?
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, 1-800-348-2551. We have time for Karina of Pittsfield. Your back door there, Jennifer Michaels.
Hi, Karina.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just read something about a treatment called EMDR for anxiety. I've been diagnosed with PTSD, and I was wondering how... what the research says about that. How effective is it really over something like DBT, which I've also had?
A lot of initials, and I understand none of them, Dr. Michaels. Do you want some explanation from the caller, or would you rather just dive in?
DBT, dialectical behavioral therapy, and Marsha Linehan created that. And that's a program for people who have emotions that are up and down. They may have suicidal thoughts. It's shown to be very effective. EMDR is a training of tapping on the head, the forehead, moving of the eyes that has been shown to help with post-traumatic stress disorder. Oftentimes people try one therapy, gain a certain amount from one, and then switch to something else, and then they reach a new level. So I think complementing your treatments is fine. Just please go to someone who has experience, certification. That would be very important.
One of the things you worry about, especially in the Berkshires, I know I'm going to get into trouble here, are people who, you know, don't have training and aren't certified and who come up with, another way of dealing with many of these issues. And you have to really be careful, don't you?
Yes, I agree, because we want to help, not hurt.
Yeah. Oh, okay, Katrina, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Very quickly, and I mean really quickly, Susan, what's the problem? We got less than a minute. Go ahead.
There's no problem. I just want to applaud Dr. Michaels for suggesting non-prescription over-the-counter medications for pain. I think people should deal with some pain and not just rely on prescriptions and take care of the root of the problem and not just mask it.
Okay, so we're out of time. Go ahead,
Dr.
Michaels.
No, and thank you, Susan, because I think pain is a useful signal that your body is giving you. So you need a little pain sometimes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks again.
Thank you.
Yeah, bye-bye. We're out of time. I want to thank Dr. Jennifer Michaels, our wonderful Dr. Jennifer Michaels of the Breen Center, for being with us today. Support for Medical Monday comes from the hospitals of HealthQuest and HealthQuest Medical Practice, physicians offering primary and specialty health care in private office settings throughout the Hudson Valley. 1-888-525-4767 for appointments. And glasses on. Hold on a second, everybody. Woodland Pond at New Paltz, independent retirement living in apartments or cottages with progressive levels of long-term health care if needed later on, minimum age 62, 845-256-5520. And thanks to our wonderful engineer, Zach Malloy. Thanks to Kelly McGuire for answering the phones. Our producer is Patrick Donges. Thanks again for joining us on the Vox Pop. On tomorrow's program, we discuss international journalism with a wonderful fellow, Adnan Rashid, who is visiting with us this week right here at WAMC. I'm Alan Chartok. Stay tuned now for a news update. Again, thanks for listening.